Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
It's Tuesday, everybody, and I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Coach Jen, and you're listening to the Horses in the Morning Show on the Horse Radio Network for November 19th, episode 791. This episode is brought to you by EasySignsOnline.com and Good Morning, Horse World.
Good Tuesday morning to you, and I do mean a good Tuesday morning.
Well, if you insist on being accurate about it.
You know, only somebody with perfect comedic timing could produce this much energy in one shot.
You gotta learn that your time in the saddle ain't as rough as the life in between. And the fence isn't there for you to straddle. And you can't change horses in the middle of your dream.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us here this morning. It's Jennifer and I this morning. Jamie has the day off taking care of the baby, and she'll be back here tomorrow morning for the PMFG.com Wheel of Trivia. It will actually be the last Wheel of Trivia that we play for a couple of weeks because next week we have some special programming. It'll be the Wednesday will be the day before Thanksgiving, so we have some special programming for you. So it'll be a couple weeks, so definitely call in to play tomorrow morning for the Wheel of Trivia, 347-637-3238. And if you never can remember the number, just go to our website, horsesinthemorning.com, and the phone number is right at the top of the page. Also want to remind you that it's 35 days till Christmas. Just saying.
Egad.
And I'll tell you what, Jennifer, my little pony, PT Scooter, the little rescue pony, was starving to death a couple of months ago, brought him home. We thought he was going to die on the trailer, is not on the edge of death anymore because I got to see him do a full gallop around the field at about 100 miles an hour the other day. I took Beaker out first to feed at a feed time, and I took Beaker out first for his grain out of the field, and PT had a temper tantrum. That little Hackney showed his Hackney side. He was kicking and fucking and farting, and then he took off. He could have given our greyhound a race, I'll tell you what. And at the end of the field, there's the fence. Is about 5 feet between the fence and a very large live oak tree. And what scared me to death each time is his little legs were going 90 miles an hour. He was cantering as fast as he could possibly go, screaming the entire time. And he'd get to the end of the field, and he'd make a turn right around between the tree and the fence. Now, he couldn't, of course, do it before the tree where there was plenty of room. He had to do it where there was the least amount of room and to scare his poor dad to death. And he did that about four laps before he decided he was exhausted. But
see, that's
no
something
more
else
trying to trick me.
Yeah, because Glory does the same thing when you take her off the field and let her run. She gets as close as she can to those trees.
Oh, she got 2 inches from nailing one of the live oak trees the other day when I took her out for a run. I mean, it was close. She would have broken her neck for sure.
What is it with you and your pets with this kamikaze thing? What is it?
They're speedy. I got speedy pets. They just don't have very good brakes. That's the problem. For timing or coordination.
I wish I could have seen it. I missed it. I was out with a wheelbarrow or something like that, but I heard exclamations from both you and our next-door neighbor witnessing PT Scooter flying around the field at breakneck speed.
It's just that we have just never seen him exude that much energy before. And he's been, you know, every time I take him out to work with him and ground drive him and stuff or have him pull a heavy object to get used to pulling, he whines and complains, and you can tell he's just going, I'm tired, and he's doing the whole whiny, I'm a rescue sick horse thing. Not anymore. Walk on, PT. Trot on. You're not tired.
He had his daddy fooled.
can't trick me anymore. I saw that cantering. He can get some speed, let me tell you. I was surprised. And he can buck and kick with the best of them, too. I better watch that. Let's hope he doesn't do that in a new cart.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll have a bucking strap on there.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, that would be a good idea.
They have that extra little strap that goes across the top of their croup and across to the shafts so they can't buck in the shaft.
He's never done it, though. Anytime we've ever had him in our makeshift circus harness, he has never done it. I mean, he's been pretty good that way. He's never kicked.
He is.
Knock on wood.
Cool as a cucumber. He's gotten the traces wrapped around his legs. There's stuff that comes undone. Barking dogs everywhere, lawnmowers, leaf blowers. Nothing has fazed him thus far. No.
Yeah, we pretty much have done everything you're not supposed to do when you're training a driving horse. But look, we're desensitizing him. It's a real thing. We're desensitizing.
So what we have to guard against, Glenn, is we have to make sure when we're driving PT Scooter that we don't ever drive him at supper time and hear speed buckets rattle. That's the key.
That is
the
key. Yeah, he is the most food motivated equine that we have ever had. He's
not just food motivated, he's spoiled, rotten, and naughty about it to boot.
Yes. And I don't know I don't know if we can use the excuse he was starved or he came that way before he was starved. I'm not sure. But we'll never know.
Yeah.
Well, coming up on today's show, we have a number of guests, don't we? We have Larry Weitzel, who's coming on to talk about gated dressage, not something you hear about every day. So something a little different for all our gated fans out there. We know we have many that listen to the show. And then I have a article that I want to read to you. You know, we're coming up on the 50th anniversary of JFK's death here next week on the 22nd, and this is an article about Blackjack, and that was the horse, the riderless horse that was used in the parade for his funeral march, and used actually several times that week for the various events that went on around his funeral. And this is the story of Blackjack. I want to read it to you because it's a fascinating story that we've never heard, and it's told by the officer, I think he's Army officer, who actually handled Blackjack for the whole time during all of the events. And he tells his side of the story of what it was like dealing with Blackjack. So we're going to hear about that. Then we've had Lisa Wallace on the show before, right? She's the one that does the Mustang Millions. She's the eventer that also trains Mustangs.
That's right. She's a crossover gal. She's an eventing rider and Mustang Million competitor from Georgia.
And she trained two this year, so we're not having her on. Who are we having on?
We are having on, get this, Elisa Wilson. And Elisa Wallace made the difficult decision earlier this year that she would have to sell Nim, who was one of this year's Mustangs. She did too. He's not going to move on into the eventing business. That's not his favorite thing to do. So she made that difficult decision to let him find a new home. And Elisa Wilson is his new owner, and she's going to come on and tell us all about why she got Nim, maybe what his name means, and what she's going to do with him. I'm excited because he's an adorable little horse.
He is. He is really, really handsome. Well, that's terrific. And then later in the show, we also have Diane Little coming back with us. She's our hunter-jumper trainer from Piece by Piece Farm. She's going to join us and answer a couple of listener questions that we've gotten for her. So that should be fun as well. So we have a full show planned for you today, as well as...
Don't forget.
You know, we'd like to do some,
Don't forget. We've got Turkey Day trivia.
That's right. You know, we like to do things when Jamie's not here that would annoy... You know, that if we did them when she was here, we would have to hear her ranting and raving about being a vegetarian. So we like to do the food stuff that involves meat. That we love when she's not here, because then we just don't have to listen to it. So she's not here today, so we're talking turkey. I mean, we're only a week away from Thanksgiving, so we might as well start some turkey talk. So we're going to be doing that later in the show as well. A lot to do here today, but let's get started with our daily winning. My daily winning goes out to all of the combined drivers from years past, and I mean years past, I mean 80s and early 90s, when they had to drive marathons and around those wicked marathon courses, which were, I think, much more wicked back then than they are now.
Yeah, they were tougher back then. Yeah.
It was crazy. I just posted a video. Go to horsesinthemorning.com. It's called Old School Driving, and it's a video put to music of all of these crashes and wrecks that happened in the marathon courses, taken by, what, old 8-millimeter film, I bet, most of these.
Yeah, this is a free video.
Geez, there were some impressive wrecks. Let me tell you, these people just didn't wreck. They wrecked. I mean, what inferior carts. The carts were literally falling apart in these obstacles. A couple of the Meadowbrooks, the seat fell off the back, and the riders went off the back. And then, you know, several of them, the horses went over, and, you know, it was just an impressive display of wrecks. If you're not into watching horses and people wreck, do not watch this video, because it's all it is. And it just makes you realize how far we've come in carriages, because you just don't see that anymore. Not the number of carriages turning over.
And we noticed this, the first CDE we ever watched was at Fairhill, and we've mentioned this on the show before. And it was a 4-star level CDE, so we were initiated at the top of the game. And back in the day, part of the hazards or obstacles that drivers had to go through were things that went bump in the night. They had to go over big logs that the horses had to actually jump, and then the wheels of the carriage had to go over it too. They would go up and down steps. So there would be a 2-foot step or several of them in a row, kind of like a Normandy bank in eventing, that the horses would jump up or down, and the carriage would bounce up or down. They don't do that anymore, but a number of these video clips have those kinds of obstacles in them. Wow.
I mean, this is on carriages that weren't built very well to begin with.
Right. This was using pre-industrial revolution technology on those carriages, because when you think about it, once cars came along, they stopped advancing carriage technology. It pretty much quit in about 1870 or so. So, you know, these were just crazy. It's really hard to describe.
Well, and a lot of them didn't have, you know, back then, back in the early days of combined driving here in the United States or anywhere, they didn't have separate carriages for the cross-country / marathon phase. So they used whatever they had, which was like their dressage carriage, and they just weren't made for this. And then, oh, my God, did nobody ever check the depth of the water in the water jumps before the horses went in? The one, you have to see this one. There's four, it's a 4-in-hand of grays, and the front, the water is so deep it's over their heads. And I don't know how they didn't drown.
They're snorkeling. They were snorkeling all the way through.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like, though, if you think about it, the early days of eventing was just Wild West. This is kind of Wild West, and that's what that was. It was the same thing. It was just Wild West. There's a reason that guys like Bruce Davidson have broken every bone in their body more than once. Anyway, you have to, if you're into that kind of thing, go to Horses in the Morning Facebook page and check out the video I posted. It's interesting.
It's all right, worth it. My daily Winnie goes out to Allison Springer, and we need to congratulate her. We need to congratulate her on acquiring a horse that many folks will be familiar with, Lionheart, who was William Fox Pitt's London Olympics mount. The team won silver in London Olympics. And she didn't go, she wasn't shopping for a 4-star horse. She wasn't shopping for Lionheart. She was out shopping for prospects to bring up through the pipeline for the next Pan American Games. And she was at William Fox Pitt's yard and looking at some other horses, I suppose. And he said, you really should try out Lionheart. And she said, "Yeah." He's really outside of my price range. That's not what I'm looking for.
I can't imagine what he was asking for that horse.
Yeah,
I
really can't. Crazy.
It had to be 6 figures.
Yeah. Well, she tried him out. She fell in love. Well, maybe he's just crafty, and he knew she'd fall in love with him. And she managed over the past 60 days to put together a syndicate and purchase Lionheart, and he will be arriving here in the United States, I believe, during Thanksgiving week he arrives here. And I know all of this because Samantha Clark over there on the Eventing Radio Show brought to you by Pro. She did an interview with Allison. She got all the backstory, all the goodies. And the really fun part is...
And the price? Did she ask the price?
No, she didn't say the price. She was being very polite. There are still shares available, so you could own a part of Lionheart. Is that not the coolest thing?
So William Fox Pick took a payment plan then, huh?
Yeah, you could get me mortgage. That for Christmas, Glenn.
Yeah, there you go. Sure. You know, I can't go to a better, nicer rider. Allison Springer is one of the nicest people in the eventing community. She just is liked by everybody. She's a damn good rider. I mean, she's a very good rider. She treats the horses well. I'm so happy for her. She deserves this, and you know, she should be looking at making a team or two with this horse. Let's hope everything stays sound and healthy, and Allison can get a lot of good years out of Lionheart.
Yeah, he's only 11, so he's got quite a few more four stars ahead of him.
Yeah, it's not like racehorses where they're done at three. So,
An 11-year-old four star horse is really in the prime of his career. Going to be a great fit. I'm excited about it.
Well, why don't you head off and try and get our first guest lined up? We have Larry Weitzel coming up to talk about gated dressage. And while you're doing that, I'm going to talk about WEG for a little bit. The 2014 tickets in France, they've actually sold about 130,000 tickets in the first round. They opened it up in rounds. I think they learned a lot from Kentucky and how that all went. But they've already sold 130,000 tickets to the 2014 World Equestrian Games over in Normandy. But there are still about 270,000 left on the market. The tickets first went on sale June the 6th, and a total, as I said, will be 400,000 tickets. And they are reopening that. It'll be open till March again. So if you're looking at heading to France, tickets are available at this point. I don't know how the prices are compared to what the WEG was. It was one of the big complaints about the WEG in Lexington is that the tickets were so pricey. But the they're also doing interviews right now. There are 5,000 shortlisted candidates, not of athletes, but of volunteers. And they're actually doing individual interviews with all the volunteers over in Paris and Cannes. And they're hoping to whittle it down to 3,000 volunteers who will help out for the games. The individual interviews will be done on December 14th, and they're reviewing applicants' skills, experience, and motivation. They will receive their postings and timetables by the end of May of next year. So they'll know exactly what they're doing. And of course, anybody that's been to Rolex or over to the horse park during Rolex or the World Equestrian Games knows that Land Rover is a big part of that. And has most of us have done the Land Rover experience where we drive around their little obstacle course, which is a whole lot of fun. Well, the British car maker has joined the games as the official sponsor. And as an official sponsor, and all of the games organizers and people involved in setting up the event will be driving Land Rovers, of course. So they have a fleet of vehicles that are going to be made available for the WEG in 2014 over in Normandy. So they're involved as well. One other thing before we get to our guest on the WEG front, of course, everybody knows by now that there are three cities still in the running, Bromont in Canada and Wellington in Kentucky are also in the running. I was talking to a couple of professional eventers yesterday and asked the question about whether they'd like to see it back in Kentucky and who thought what about Wellington. And all four of them said the same thing, Wellington. I was really surprised. Wellington's had such a nightmare dealing with the politics down there and getting the horse shows they do have going over the winter, the winter festivals and stuff.
Right.
And they're really, anybody who hasn't been there, they're really lacking in space. It's all houses and subdivisions down there.
Yeah.
It's
a very urban area. Yeah.
Well, one of the things that was brought up is, you know, where would they put the cross-country course? That's one thing. The second thing is, you know, you need a cross-country course not only for you need it for eventing, but you also need it for driving as well. So, you know, one of the things that they did talk about was that the reason they won it in Wellington is that it would leave a legacy, that there would be a legacy down there, that then they could hold major, you know, three- or four-star events in Wellington, that something major could happen over the winter. So, you know, that is a good point. It is something that I hadn't thought
before. I've got a sneaking suspicion that the folks at the Florida Horse Park, which is in Ocala, would rather it didn't go to Wellington.
Yeah, but they're not bidding. So Wellington's bidding and they're not.
But that would be a hefty chunk of competition. Well, maybe they'd like it to go to Wellington to encourage more eventers to spend more time down here in the winter. I don't know.
Yes. But, you know, it is let me think. They have them, October is when the games usually are. So the weather's turned down there. I was thinking it's going to be really hot, but it's turned down there by then, so it won't be so bad.
It's comfortable.
So we'll see. That's the opinion of four professional eventers I talked to yesterday was all Wellington. Now, everybody wouldn't mind. They all said the same thing. We don't care where it is. Any of those three is fine. We don't have to fly our horses anywhere. So the major consensus is we don't care. It's going to be in our neck of the woods. As long as it's in North America.
In North America.
We're happy. Yeah. All right. You want to introduce our first guest?
Coming up here, we have invited Larry Weitzel, who is WeitzelGatedHorsemanship.com, and he is a longtime gated horse trainer who started out in a more traditional track in the gated business, but then discovered the gated horse had so much more to offer, and he started using dressage theories with his gated horses to train them to move better and more comfortably and more athletically for a greater number of riders. So he was really at the forefront of gated dressage, which is becoming more and more popular every year. So we thought we would invite Larry to the show today to explain to us how this whole gated dressage thing got started, what it is, what it has in common with, quote, regular dressage, and what it doesn't. So welcome to the show, Larry.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us this morning and helping us out to understand a little bit about gated dressage, because those of us who are outside of the gated community, whether it be competitive gated horses or dressage or endurance or trail riding, we're a little bit clueless when it comes to gated horses. So let's start out with, how did you get involved with gated horses in general?
Like the trail ride and gated horses, of course, are really good for that. And then I got into showing. And so I showed like in the 70s and 80s.
And very successfully. You showed very successfully.
I did real well in the show ring. Pretty much if you can train and you work hard, you can win. But when I was winning, my horses seemed like they were a little bit anxious. So I thought, you know, that my horses would like me better if I would train better. So I started looking around, and I found a classical trainer, and so I went and studied with him.
So you started out your journey into dressage with a classical dressage trainer, and then you decided to apply those skills and theories to your gated horses. When you first started making that transition, taking classical dressage and applying it to gated horses, can you talk a little bit about some of the things that were the things that were the same, and are there some things that are different when you start applying those things to gated horses?
Well, when I spent time and actually went and lived with him, and so I never worked a gated horse the whole time I was with him. And so I learned that a lot of the things that I did to show were not really good for the horse biomechanically. And so when I went home, I kind of decided, the first year that I stayed with him, I went home and I kind of decided, you know, I don't care if my horses don't gate. I'm never going to do the things that I used to do because biomechanically they hurt the horse. But when I started using the methods I'd learned and all, I found that all of my horses gated better, more evenly, softer. And they seemed to like being around me better.
Interesting.
So when I started making the change.
Now, specifically, what breeds of gated horses did you work with early on?
In the beginning, it was mostly Pasifinas, who are a more reactive breed, but in the last probably 15 years, I've just trained all gated breeds. I've trained just about every gated breed there is. And I would say that at our farm, mostly we get Rockies and Walkers and Foxtrotters, and then maybe Passos are the next. But we've trained everything, Icelandics, gated Morgans, you name it, we've trained it.
So what would perhaps be some of, coming from outside of the gated community again, are there some misconceptions that folks outside of the gated community might have about gated horses? Because for the most part, we're only exposed to gated horses who are trained in what you might call the more traditional styles. Are there some misconceptions about gated horses as a whole that we have that using dressage theories are going to help remove?
Well, you know, dressage, people say that dressage training is good for all horses, but then a lot of the dressage people kind of frown on gated horses. But, you know, if you train a gated horses with correct training, like classical dressage, they're going to be more athletic. They're going to have prettier, more fluid movements. Their gait's going to be softer and smoother because it's more fluid. So I think a lot of the misconception comes from they watch gated riders ride, and in the gated world, a lot of the gated riders are told to, like, sit on their pockets, lean back, stick their feet out, use big bits to get the horse to gate, and you know, that's kind of the general perception of the gated world. And we go around the country doing expos and clinics hoping to kind of change that, because they use the big bits and drive them forward because most people are told that's the way you get the gated horse to gate, is to drive them into the hand. But really what caused a gated horse is genetically bred to gate. So his genes tell him to gate. But you have to bring the gate out, and what brings the gate out is to engage the hind legs or get some energy in the hind end. And so when you drive it forward, you want to have taught the horse balance and lightness in the hand, so you don't have to have a big bit to hold him back. You can energize the horse and send him forward without him running through your hands. But gated horses are taught to gait most often before they have the muscle development or the balance. So when the riders send them forward into the hands, of course they run through the hands, so then they have to get big bits to prevent them from running through the hands. That's kind of what we see.
Kind of like a cycle. I mean, there's a cycle there.
Yeah, it's a vicious cycle.
Yeah, and I'm glad to see you're out there trying to help change that. Have you found acceptance within the gated community with your clinics and with what you're trying to accomplish?
You know, most gated people are trail riders because that's what the gated horse is most suited for. So our clinics are always full, and we're very popular at expos. You know, some of the diehard old show people, they think that we're the devil. But because we're trying to say, you know, you shouldn't even ask your horse for gait until you've developed a little muscle and developed some of the posture muscles so that he can carry himself in a frame that he can energize his hind end and go to the bridle. And then that brings out the genes. You know, if you train any horse that way, if his genes say trot, he'll trot beautifully. And if his genes say gait, he'll gait beautifully. Anytime you try to make a horse do something, you're going to create tension.
Well, Larry, those guys that you were talking about right there are self-imploding right now, or the Congress is going to help them anyway. So, I mean, either way, eventually things change, and I'm so glad to see you're out. Are there actually competitions for gated dressage?
There are competitions. I think Foch is a gated organization,
right,
that's trying to change the gated world, trying to stop some of these, you know, big, making the feet grow big and the big bits.
Yep.
They're trying to. So they're organizing dressage competitions for gated horses. I actually don't do competition. I just do classical training. Most of my customers are trail riders that want a safe horse, you know. But if they wanted to compete in dressage, they could do it easily because of the way the horses are trained. But in reality, if you train a horse correctly, he's also going to be a safer trail horse because he's not going to stumble. He's going to obey the aids. And horses that are in balance and on the aids, they don't spook. They don't get buddy sour, the types of things that trail riders want.
Well, not only that, let's be honest. There's two people involved in that relationship, and you're also creating better riders in addition to the horse.
Yeah, most of our work, actually, you know, at our clinics, we help them understand how the horse works biomechanically and the type of move and how to do movements, so that the movement is for the horse's benefit, and you're not just teaching the horse a movement as a trick. But most of our time at clinics is spent helping the rider get better balance in his seat, being able to give his aids better, being softer with his hands. So, of course, the horse trains faster when the rider's correct. And, you know, if you're teaching your horse movements like many people do and you're harsh with your aids or out of balance, it takes years to fix the horse.
Correct on all counts, Larry. This has been a fascinating conversation. We could probably go on and on and on forever, but we're a little bit running out of time. Do you folks have a website or Facebook page where people can learn more and perhaps find out where there's going to be a clinic in their area?
Yeah, we'll have our 2014 clinic dates up in December. The website is WeitzelGatedHorsemanship.com. I'm kind of an old-fashioned guy. I don't have Facebook or any of that kind of stuff, but I have a website, WeitzelGatedHorsemanship.com.
Well, Larry, you are old-fashioned in the best way, and we will put a link to your website page up here on our Facebook page so folks, our listeners, can find it. And I want to thank you again for stopping by and spending some time with us. I know you just got back from some clinics, so you probably have jet lag. So thanks again, and have a great day, Larry.
All right. Thanks, Larry, for having me. Thank you.
Good to talk to you.
Thank you.
Well, there, that, you know, we get complaints a lot of times from the gated community because we have a lot of listeners there that we don't talk about gated a whole lot, and we don't agree with a lot of the training techniques of what people he was talking about. But, you know, the Friends of Sound Horses Fosh is what he referred to, and guys like Larry are out to change that, and I think that's terrific.
That's a fascinating guy. I really hadn't had a chance to chat with him much before today because, as I said, he has been on the road doing clinics. He's old school in the best definition of the word. So it's really cool to hear him talking about creating a balanced, fluid horse for whatever you're going to do with your gated horse.
Let me tell you, I don't know how old he is, but he has more energy than me because I'm looking at his clinic schedule for 2013, and there must have been 50 of them on here. So, I mean,
really?
He's,
wow.
He's doing a ton of – I mean, there are literally 50 of them on here every weekend. Busy guy. So that's good. We're making better trail riders out there, too, which can't hurt in any way, shape, or form. Let's take a break. We have a commercial here from Easy Signs Online, and then we're going to come back with more show. We have a couple more terrific guests, and I have a reading I want to do for you, too, tell you a little bit about JFK's horse, the riderless horse that was used in his funeral. It's a fascinating story, so we'll be right back.
With Christmas season fast approaching, it's time to start planning a custom gift that will last for many years to come. Visit our friends at ezsignsonline.com and browse their unique website for their many custom sign options and styles.
With affordable prices for customized signs starting at $39.95, your holiday gift giving just got easier. Their step-by-step online sign ordering process allows you to choose only the sign options you want and see all the pricing up front. From horse farm entrance signs, vinyl banners, magnetic vehicle signs to stall nameplates, and much, much more for every horse owner.
They ship to every state in the U.S., so take advantage of an additional 10% off coupon to all Horse Radio Network listeners. Simply mention HRN13 when ordering. That's HRN13. A $75 order minimum for discount. Cannot be combined with other discounts or coupons.
Free shipping also applies to most sign orders, so see the website for details.
Place your order early to allow plenty of time for Christmas delivery. Check out the website today at EZSignsOnline.com. That's EZSignsOnline.com or call them at 1-800-640-8180. That's 1-800-640-8180. With the 50th anniversary of JFK's assassination coming up here very shortly, he was assassinated on November the 22nd in 1963, I found an article that I thought would be very interesting for our listeners involving the riderless horse that was used in the funeral. This was a story written by Jeremy Gray, and it was in the Miami Herald. And we don't usually read stories word for word, but I thought you would be fascinated by this one as I was. I couldn't stop reading it to learn all about this amazing guy who took care of this horse that was used in the funeral procession for JFK. Mobile, Alabama. PFC Arthur Carlson spent the night before in a stable caring for Blackjack, so he used his day off to stop by the laundromat. Walking out that November day, Carlson, then 19 years old, saw a group of people gathering around a car and heard the news over the radio. President John F. Kennedy had been assassinated in Dallas. "My day off was over, and I reported for duty," Carlson said. The Robertsdale native was one of the Old Guard, the elite unit of soldiers who keep eternal vigil over the Tomb of the Unknowns at Arlington National Cemetery as part of their service with the 3rd U.S. Infantry Regiment, the oldest active infantry regiment in the U.S. Army, with roots tracing back to 1794. Carlson had been in the unit for about 6 months and had no idea he would soon be guiding Blackjack, a 16-year-old quarter horse named in honor of General John J. Blackjack Pershing, as the riderless horse walked through the streets of Washington while the world watched Kennedy laid to rest. Carlson also had no idea of the kind of fight Blackjack was going to give him. "He'd always been a calm horse. He knew his job, and he did it. No problem," Carlson said. The Sunday after the assassination, the day Lee Harvey Oswald was shot, they followed the coffin to where Kennedy would lie in state. A metal gate resting against the wall of a tunnel they passed through came crashing to the ground. "It made a hellacious noise," Carlson said. "Blackjack got spooked. He stayed that way for 2 days, and then he was back to normal." The next day, they followed the caisson with Kennedy's coffin to Arlington. Carlson said he had to keep control of the terrified horse. Prior to the military, Carlson said his only experience with horses was seeing them in the movies. "I knew it was important and I had to do it right," Carlson said in a telephone interview from his home in Mobile. "I knew if this horse gets away from me, I'm going to be walking guard duty around a radar station in Greenland before the week is out." Carlson, however, did keep control, even when Blackjack stepped on his foot outside St. Matthew's Cathedral. "At first, I thought he broke a couple of my toes in my right foot, but he didn't," Carlson said. His shoe, however, was ruined. In the extensive news coverage of the day's events, Blackjack's antics did not go unnoticed. The black riderless horse that symbolized the lost leader in the funeral procession of President Kennedy today seems spirited and difficult to handle, the New York Times reported. Of the many tributes that day, the report continued, "Perhaps the most poignant touch of all was the sight of the huge steed, not quite black, more of a dark chestnut, spirited, trailing the horse-drawn caisson and its coffin of the deceased president." In 2008, a collection of memoirs of those who took part in the ceremony, Carlson gave this account to author Thomas Reed. "At the White House, instead of standing steady, Blackjack constantly threw his head and danced around me. After about 10 seconds, people stopped crowding us and gave us space. We carried the president's body from the White House to the Capitol. Then we moved out and walked back to the stable. When I got there, a few men who had stayed to take care of the other horses said that all the TV people had talked constantly about Blackjack and the soldier with him. The soldier had the public's attention." After the president lay in state, we went back to the Capitol. Blackjack continued to act up. We moved the president's body to St. Matthew's Cathedral for the funeral service. At the cathedral, people again decided not to crowd Blackjack and me. I tried to stand at parade rest holding his bridle. At least one of us should behave in proper military fashion. At one point, he was pawing the pavement and struck my right toe. I was afraid some toes had been broken. Later, I found that the shoe was ruined, but no bones were broken. The shoe had to be replaced. After the ceremonies back at the stables, the telephone rang. Jackie Kennedy was requesting the tack, the gear for the horse that day, to be delivered to the White House. I put on a clean uniform, borrowed some shoes, and gathered up the tack, cleaned but not polished, and a car came to pick me up. Arriving at the White House, the lights had been dimmed and the mood somber. I gave everything to a colonel. She, the First Lady, wasn't seeing anyone, Carlson said. The horse's saddle and blanket, the boots and saber the horse carried in honor of the president remained part of the Kennedy's Library permanent collection. Following his military service, Carlson spent a career in offshore gas production, married, had a daughter, and now has three grandchildren. Blackjack died in 1976, having participated in state funerals for two more former presidents, Herbert Hoover and Lyndon B. Johnson. Although Carlson knew the significance of the event, it was lost on his daughter until she was in college and saw a split-second image of her father in the music video for Michael Jackson's Man in the Mirror. She got all excited. Now, dear old dad has done something significant. He appeared in a Michael Jackson video, Carlson said. This article appeared in the Miami Herald and was written by Jeremy Gray. What a fascinating story of Blackjack, one we didn't know about. You know, you see those horses in those parades, and they're done by the caisson unit, the same unit that we had an interview, remember, with the guy who was in charge of the caisson unit last year?
Yeah.
We met him at Rolex, I think.
No, we met him at Ada.
Wasn't it Ada? Oh, it was
Ada. The Judy over at
Police Right.
That's right, yeah.
That's right. It was at Ada, and... what a fascinating, you know, they have a heck of a job where they do all the caisson work for Arlington National Cemetery, but they also do the parades for those at lie in state and presidents and things. So neat story about Blackjack, and it lived a full life, but apparently didn't like the parades a whole lot. So
I made me feel better that Blackjack did.
Yeah, it made me feel better that even at high levels like that, the horses can act up, you know. So it didn't make me feel so bad about the parades that we've been in with horses that have acted up. So,
see,
you know,
you're in very fine company, Glenn.
I am. I'm in presidential company, apparently.
Yeah.
Well, as we mentioned earlier in the show, Jennifer talked about the fact that Elisa Wallace has been on with us. She has she's an eventer who was also trained several Mustangs now for the Mustang Million, the Mustang Makeovers and the Mustang Million. Well, this last time she trained two of them. One of them's name is Nim, and she decided that that horse was not going to go on to become a championship eventer. So she decided to sell it, and we have Elisa Wilson. I know, it's very confusing. We've got two Elisas on here, and both last names start with W. But Elisa Wilson is the one who bought Nim, and we're going to find out why and how Nim is doing. Good morning, Elisa.
Good morning, Glenn.
How are things with Nim? Now, is he at your place now? You now have ownership of him?
I do. I have him. He's the fourth horse that I own now.
And where do you live? What part of the country?
I live up in northwest Montana, pretty close to the Canadian border.
Oh, wow. You're up where it's really cold.
Yeah.
Very matter of fact.
Yeah,
typical Montanan.
Yeah, it's really cold there. We live in Florida, so, you know, we kind of avoided all that.
we've already had snow. It's pretty cold.
How does Nim taking that? Because he came from the South, too. So is he growing a coat for you this year?
Yeah, he since he's been here a little over a month and a half, I made sure he had plenty to eat. And he had enough time, I think, to acclimate his coat and have it grow in. I was real concerned with him not having enough of a winter coat. But he's doing really good.
Terrific. Well, let's back up a little bit. Let's rewind here a little bit. How did you find out about Nim, and why did you decide you wanted a Mustang?
Well, it was kind of in May. I've had this dream to have a Mustang, the crazy dream that I think everyone has, and I was turning 50 in May.
The 13-year-old girl's dream, right?
Yes. But I turned 50, and I kept thinking, if not now, when? When am I going to do this? And I had this plan that I was going to buy a trained Mustang, and then I was going to go adopt a yearling. And this other person was going to train a Mustang for me, and that sort of fell through. And then when I went to get my yearling, I came home with a 4-year-old. and began training the four-year-old, and it ended up being quite an adventure, and he didn't come along as easily as some of them did. But I was able to get him gentled and brought him down to Texas, because this was, again, part of the dream to be able to do this whole thing, travel to Texas with this horse and show him. But meanwhile, I still had this idea in my head that I wanted to get a trained Mustang also. And so I kept kind of, you know, in contact with watching Elisa's horses. And I had also talked to a lot of other people about their Mustangs that they were going to be reassigning. And once I got down there and I looked at horses, because I did not need another horse to bring home. No, I did not need another horse. And my husband didn't know I was bringing home another one. But when I went to go visit with the horses, I looked at some gorgeous, gorgeous horses, but there was just something about Nim that I was drawn to him. He just, his quiet personality, and I just couldn't explain it. And so I had decided I'm either bringing home Nim or I'm not going to bring home another one. So that's kind of how I got him.
Well, he's handsome as heck, too. I mean, he's a really good-looking horse, which I can see why he caught your attention in the first place. Now, she brought him along pretty far. He's pretty well-trained. Have you been able to ride him and do much with him?
Yeah, he's a very good trail horse. When I first, you know, got him, I was kind of nervous with a new horse and did some groundwork with him and stuff, and finally said, I've got to take him out on the trail. And once he gets on the trail, he's just a different horse. He loves it, completely loves it. And I was a little short on time, and I would go out for, you know, 30 minutes, because we live in the mountains. We can ride for hours just from my house. And I would go out for 30 minutes, and I'd need to get back home. And he would kind of balk and say, no, I want to keep going. And he just loves being out on the trail.
Go ahead. You trail riding for pleasure right now. Do you have any aspirations to compete with him in any way?
Well, there isn't a lot of opportunity where I live to do a lot of stuff, but the one thing I'd like to get into is doing more liberty work, because in the winter it is so hard to ride during the winter, and so I'm kind of learning how to do more of that. And my first Mustang, he is, because we couldn't ride him for so long, I've gotten pretty good at doing stuff with him at liberty, so I'm kind of hoping to have both of them working together to do things. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of for fun, and I have no idea where it will lead.
There's two horses that really I love seeing work at liberty, two breeds rather, and that's Arabians and Mustangs. I think those two breeds really are conducive to, you know, to liberty work. And it's so much fun to see them do it. I got to ask you a question, though, that we don't know the answer to, and we had a Lisa Wallace on the show several times. Where does the show Nim, or the name Nim, come from? It's NIMH. What does it mean, and do you know why she named him Nim?
Well, she told me it was from the movie, the little cartoon movie of The Secret of Nim, with the little mice and there's the big secret going on.
That must have been before our time, or after our time, because I don't know that one.
It was animated, Glenn. You didn't see it.
that's right.
Yeah, and it's a big secret going on with the rats and the mice and the people, and they take this something that causes the rats to be able to talk, and because Nim's personality, he's really hard to describe, kind of a secret in a sense, and so that's why she named him Nim.
Okay, got it. I got
it. It fits him. I haven't found another name that fits him, because he is so interesting.
Now, I have to ask you, because I'm called America's Horse Husband, and what exactly did your husband say when you got home?
He just said, well, who's this?
He's resigned.
He's learned.
Yes, he's very much resigned.
Yeah, we've all done that a few times, haven't we? Because what are you going to do? You just brought the horse home. There's no sending them back to Texas. You know?
Yeah, that's he's funny. Not a horse person, but he's very supportive. And I don't think he was surprised, but I had kind of hinted that I was bringing another horse home. I said, I've got the horses settled down as I was driving home. And and then we open up the trailer. He didn't say anything, but he's not very good at texting, and so he would just be silent. So I was very nervous when I did get home. And then I open the trailer door, and I take Nim out because he was in the back, and I say, here, hold him, while I then go get my other Mustang out. And he didn't really bat an eye. He's just...
You've been married a while.
Good horse husband. Yeah, good horse husband.
He said, no more. Please, no more. I said, okay.
Yeah, and there's another statement. You know, we make that statement a lot, and we put our foot down, and we say, that's it. This is it. We have too many. And now what? Every time I did – see, I learned not to do that, because every time I did that, I got another horse. So – and then at one point, I had more horses than Jennifer, and that didn't go over well. So, you know, I went the opposite route, I think. And if we could afford it, I'd still have more horses than Jennifer.
Thank goodness for the budget.
Well, Dom, congratulations. This is really cool that you really got to get a horse that's been your lifelong dream.
Yeah, it's very exciting. And he's, you know, we're still learning about each other. And he's really growing on me. He did his first little, you know, nicker whinny when I went out there. And that was pretty cool. But he's a little bit, he's reserved. His affection is very subtle. He doesn't come up and mob you. He hangs back and watches. And so when you get that affection from him, it's really kind of special.
Well, that's terrific. And that's just probably his personality. He'll probably always be that way, as those horses that are that way. But they tend to be, in our experience, they also tend to be the most trustworthy because they're not reactionary either. You know, so
right.
So when you're in Montana, in the middle of the woods, and the bear comes out, you want to be on Nim, is what I'm saying, not the other one.
Right. Yeah, I feel pretty safe on him when you put the saddle on him and go down the trail. He just seems to say, "This is what I know. This is what I like," and he likes being out in the woods and seeing things. And
yeah, he feels like he's at home. Well, congratulations on this. I'm so excited for you, and I'm excited that Elisa Wallace got to find a terrific home for Nim. I'm sure she is one of the coolest people we've had on the show, and I know that finding a nice home for these horses is very important to her, and I think it's good for both of you. Win-win all around. And for Nim,
well,
too.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Except for the snow, I think Nim's probably pretty happy. We'll just... Well, thank you. We appreciate you being on. Elisa Wilson from Montana.
Thank you.
Well, there you go. It's always good to hear what happens to these horses after. You know, they get trained up for the Mustang makeover and for the Mustang Million this past year. And now we got to get a little handle on well, he's just going to be a happy trail horse with a woman that's wanted him all our life.
Yeah,
cool,
it's pretty cool.
That?
Neat story. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, very good. Let's take a break for our song of the day. And because Jamie is not here and we're only, what did I say, how many days till Christmas? 34?
34 days?
Yeah, something like that. We're only like 34 days from Christmas. I thought I'd play a little more Christmas music. This is Templeton Thompson's Christmas Times Are Coming. Thought it was appropriate. Right after this word from Equisketch. Glenn the Geek here. The life of horse person is hard enough, and we all hate doing the required paperwork, and unfortunately many of us never get around to it, and it just piles up on our desk. That is about to change thanks to the Equisketch Records app for your iPhone or iPad. My wife and I use it to track our horses, and we absolutely love this thing. Equisketch Records is the most thorough and complete equestrian records app on the market today. We love this app because you can track your farrier work, your dental, your coggins, medicines, worming, and so much more. And you can get reminders on your device when all of these things are due. You'll never forget a worming or shots or farrier visit again. But it not only tracks your horse, you can also manage your horse shows, including individual events. You can manage riders, including lessons and memberships, and so much more.
And you can sync it between your iPhone and your iPad, and all of this for the price of a couple of cups of coffee from Starbucks. Search for Equisketch Records in the iOS App Store or go to equisketch.com. That's EQUISKETCH.com. Equisketch.com.
Can't you hear those bells? Can't you hear those bells? Can't you hear those bells? Christmas time's a-coming, Christmas time's a-coming, Christmas time's a-coming, and I know callin', my old home's a-callin', tall pines a-hummin', 'cause Christmas time's a-comin'. Can't you hear those bells ringin', ringin', joy, joy, hear them singin', when it's snowin' I'll be goin' back to my country home. 'Cause Christmas time's a-comin', Christmas time's a-comin', Christmas time's a-comin'. Running, 'cause Christmas time's a-coming. Can't you hear those bells ringing, ringing, joy, joy, hear them singing, when it's snowing I'll be going back to my country home. Christmas time's a-coming, Christmas time's a-coming, and I know I'm going home. Christmas time's a-coming, Christmas time's a-coming, Christmas time's a-coming, and Lord, I'm going home.
Christmas time's a-coming by our friend Templeton Thompson. You can find all of her music, including all of our holiday music, on iTunes or TempletonThompson.com, either one. You're listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenn the Geek. I am here with Coach Jen in the co-host and producer chair today. Jamie is off today. She'll be back again tomorrow morning as we play the EquityMFG.com Wheel of Trivia. And as I mentioned earlier in the show, this will be the last Wheel of Trivia for a couple of weeks. Next week, we have special programming for you as it's the day before Thanksgiving here in the United States. So we'll be back in 2 weeks, beginning of December, and then we're going to have new prizes loaded up on the wheel, so you're going to want to join us and win yourself some holiday gifts. No better way to do it than just give us a call and just answer a simple trivia question. So we're looking forward to your call tomorrow. All new callers tomorrow will be put to the front of the line. So if you have never called before, please do get brave and give us a call. Why not? And you can call as many times as you want. We have callers to call every week trying to win prizes and win some fantastic stuff. Now, one of the things I did want to mention while Jennifer's getting our next guest set up, Diane Little, our hunter-jumper authority and person that helps us out, from Piece by Piece Farm. While she's getting her set up, I did want to mention also for you history buffs out there, and this
This means something to Jennifer and I because we spent a lot of time there while we lived in Pennsylvania. We would visit the Gettysburg battlefield a lot over in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. And today is the 150th anniversary of the Gettysburg Address. It was done about 5 months after the battle when Lincoln came and did the Gettysburg Address. They're having all kinds of reenactments and ceremonies over there today. And they're actually, the National Park Service is streaming the ceremony live to 90,000 colleges, schools, libraries, and museums nationwide. So that's pretty cool that kids all over the country will be able to watch it. They're having a big parade on Saturday featuring Union and Confederate reenactors who will lay wreaths at portions of the battlefield their units defended. So there'll be a big parade. Now, that's something that if we lived in Pennsylvania, we would go to this weekend.
Definitely.
I would really enjoy that. That would be a lot of fun. They said that over 235,000 people came to Gettysburg this year around the battle time. They had over 140,000 people attend the 150th anniversary battle. We had several people, reenactors on the show that were heading to Gettysburg for that. This was like the ultimate Super Bowl for reenactors because it was one of the largest reenactments that has ever happened for the Civil War, and they had over 40,000 reenactors there. What did we say? There were like 1,000, 2,000 horses there for the cavalry units.
Quite a sight to see.
Yep, so that's going on today, just for your history lesson of the day. That's what's happening. But now we have our next guest, Jennifer.
Joining us now, Diane Little from Piece by Piece Farm. She comes on every month and it gives us helpful hints and answers listener questions for the hunter-jumper crowd, and we really appreciate her. We dragged her in kicking and screaming from the arena. She's been teaching lessons all morning long, so we hope she has some voice left. And welcome to the show, Diane.
Hi, how are you?
We are doing great this morning. Has the weather been kind to you thus far this fall?
I have to say it has been very, very kind. It was like 60 degrees yesterday, so we cannot complain.
Wow.
Diane, Piece by Piece Farm is in Chester County, Pennsylvania, right?
Yes. Chester Springs,
okay.
PA.
Yeah, okay, cool.
So the weather cleared out for you just in time for your lesson this morning. You got some nasty weather this week.
Yeah, it was. It was completely fine this morning. We started teaching early, so hopefully I have a good voice left.
Well, we will try to take it easy on you, and you have very kindly agreed to answer a listener question for us today, and I'm going to read the listener question to our audience so that they know what we're talking about. This one is from Lisa, and she writes, we're looking at Frida. We don't know what Frida's real name is because she just gave us her email address. She writes, I am getting a new helmet for Christmas. Yay. And really want to get something with some bling on it because black velvet is so boring to wear every day because I can only afford one helmet. How much bling can I get away with? Ooh, this is treading on delicate territory, Diane.
Yeah, I really liked the question because I get a lot of questions from my students about what to wear and about, you know, what's proper attire now because they've come out with so many options, a lot of which are fun options. So I thought it was a funny question. So I thought it was a really good question. And I mean, the truth of the matter is everybody has different opinions on this. So, you know, have a little fun. You know, I tend to be a little bit more old school. That's just the way I am. I tend to kind of be a little more reserved. But I thought it was, you know, a cool topic to go on. So as for the helmet, my opinion on helmet bling is simply that, this is what I would tell her. I would tell her, go with a normal standard black helmet. I do the leather look Charles Owen, which has kind of a sleek look. It's a beautiful helmet. It looks really, really nice. It looks really professional. Stick with that. But go ahead, go out, look at all different types of hunter of the jackets, you know, whether it be an Anima, whether it be, you know, the core. They all came out with kind of really cool collars or cool colors, cool liners. I would recommend going that route for something that's a little bit kind of more fun to ride in than your helmet, because it's less noticeable. You can have a little fun, you can have a little pop of color, but it's not going to be right out in the judge's face of, you know, this big blingy helmet. So that's my opinion on that. As for proper attire, I truly believe whether you're going to a schooling show or you're going to, you know, a normal show, bring your jacket, bring your show shirt. You know, I think it honestly makes you almost ride better when you feel like you have those nice clothes on. It makes you really kind of get up and go and really feel like, you know, you're at a horse show. You're just going to really take it seriously. So I encourage my students to come out and wear, you know, their show attire and really feel good when they walk into the arena.
So particularly with jackets, because for many folks, the jackets are an investment. And for the young riders, they're a significant investment because you have to keep buying new ones because they grow out of them. What do you think are going to be some popular and trendy colors for this show season? Are there any that are going, oh, wow, that's going to be new and different this year?
Well, I mean, I think that I saw that a lot of brown tall boots are coming out. So I
really
think that, you know, that, yeah, I was interested in that could become a little bit of a trend. You know, as for the kids, I definitely tell my clients to look on eBay and or go to one of the consignment shops, look used, because you can really find a pretty cool coat that's used, that's, you know, a nicer brand that's going to fit them better, that isn't, you know, hundreds among dollars. I mean, the big trend right now is the Animo coats. I have one. I love it. It's a fantastic coat. I'm glad I bought it. I'm glad I spent the money on it. But for the kids, I understand that, you know, you might not want to go there. You might not want to purchase something like that. But you can go online and look at eBay and see what you can find. You know, look on Craigslist. See what you can find, because you can really find a beautiful, beautiful coat that fits well, that, you know, isn't horrendously expensive. I still think trend-wise, you know, the dark navy is beautiful. I love it when there's, you know, a little accent. You know, some of the coats have the pretty liners. Sometimes they have the pockets. I think that looks really nice, but I think you got to watch. I think a little bit less is more. You don't want to walk in the arena and that be what people notice. You want them to notice yourself and your horse. You don't want them to notice the sparkles on your coat. So,
yeah. You
have
wanna,
fun,
you
but
have
not
to
too much.
Suggest your individuality rather than scream it.
Yes.
Now, going back to the helmets, because I know this has been a topic not just in the shot hunter jumper arenas, but also in the dressage arenas now, because there are so many lovely ASTM helmets available now, not all of them appropriate for all disciplines. So if you want to suggest your individuality perhaps with different textures as often as more so than the amount of sparkly shiny stuff is kind of the feeling I'm getting.
In other words,
yes.
Don't use the bright orange helmet cover. That's not good.
Yes.
No.
That's a good start. But yes, I agree. I mean, adventurers use different helmets than hunters, which can use a little bit of a different helmet than a jumper. You know what I mean? Like, there's absolutely, you know, depending on your discipline, you might be looking at something a little bit different. But you want it to be, first of all, you want it to be safe. That's the biggie. You know, if you're looking at helmets, find the ones that are the safest and you know, have that kind of quality to them more than anything else. And just make sure that it fits well, you know, it has a nice look to it, and that when you go in the arena, you're going to look very well-dressed, you're going to look put together, but you're not going to have something really loud that you know, really stands out.
So we'll continue down the riders since we're at it. In the riding breeches department, and it is getting to be the Christmas season, so I'm sure there's lots of folks out there either putting breeches on their own Christmas list or they have the breeches on Christmas list that they're buying for. Are the tan colors still the one and only for the hunter jumpers? Is it pretty much all tan for everybody?
You know, I have to say that it's definitely moving past that.
Really?
Hunters, yes. Yes, hunters absolutely tan, always. You wear tan breeches in the hunters. Jumpers, you're a little more all over the place. You wear your white breeches on your classic day. So when you are riding in your money classes, you wear white. But there is definitely a movement. You're going to see a lot of people that are starting to wear the very darker brown breeches. You see people in black at horse shows.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
There's purple, there's blue, there's all that. I can live with tan, black, and white. I would stay away from the colors. But especially in the jumper schooling classes, you're seeing a lot more versatility in kind of what people have put together. And I do think that's fun. I like it. But, you know, just always remember that when you walk into the show arena, you want to feel like you're at a horse show. You want to feel like you're walking in there and you're really kind of dressed to impress in a way. So you don't want bright purple breeches on. You want to be, you know, maybe you have a black breeches on with a beautiful jacket and your black boots, and it might look beautiful. You just want to be well put together. And absolutely 100%, when you're riding in a class that offers money, you should absolutely then have your show clothes on and have your white breeches on. They require proper attire most places, so that's the time that you really have to pay attention to what attire you're wearing.
Now, speaking of well put together, I'm looking at your Facebook page and your profile picture, something we haven't talked about, I don't think. Did you get married this year?
I got married 2 years ago.
It's 2 years ago. Okay, because I saw your wedding picture up there, and I was like, well, I thought you got married a while back. But
I have not updated in a while.
Yeah, I see that. I see that, but you look very nice.
Thank you.
You were well put together.
Thank you. I tried that day. That day was probably one of the few days I put a good effort in.
One of the few days you actually wear a dress, too, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I did see that there is some things going on at Peace by Beast Farm, though. A new barn going up, all kinds of construction and stuff.
Yes, we're very excited. We've been very busy. We always have something going on, but we are building a five-stall barn with a tack room and whatnot. I have a 16-stall facility right now, so we're upping it to 21, and that barn, the moment it goes up, it's full. So we're very excited to be growing in that way. I feel very, very lucky to have such wonderful clients, and the business keeps growing. So I'm very lucky with what I have right now.
Well, I got to tell you, we have a math formula here on the show. And the math formula is if you have 21 stalls, you have 31 horses. So all you really did was increase the number of horses that you can actually put in the barn. Right?
I don't know if I want 31. Let's stick with 21.
We always also talked about there being lines. Like after you get over 7, after you get over 3, the work doubles. After you get over 7, the work seems to quadruple. And then
yes.
You're okay till you get up to about 20. And then after 20, you just need help. I mean, you need a lot of help because you aren't doing it anymore.
You're right. The 16 to 21 is actually making a pretty large difference in work and how much we have to do and how many people go to horse shows, you know, looking into buying another trailer, things like that. It makes a big difference. So we're ready for it, though. We're excited.
Well, good. Well, congratulations. Seems like things are going very well. Give everybody the is the Facebook page the best place for them to go? Or
yes, yeah, I would say I put a lot of stuff up on Piece by Piece Farms Facebook page, as well as my own Diane Little Facebook page. So if you really want to see what's going on, I basically update that definitely every weekend. So that gives you a good idea of what we're doing.
All right, and that's Peace, P-E-A-C-E, like the peace sign, by Peace, like pieces of stuff. So it's Peace by Peace Farm. That's how it's spelled. Diane, thank you so much for joining us again. It's always fun to have you on.
Thanks a lot.
All right, take care, Diane.
You too.
And happy Thanksgiving. Have a great holiday.
You too. Thanks.
We're going to have to start asking our guests what they do at the holidays because, you know, that's coming up here pretty quick, and we usually do that every year, find out because people do different things. Some people don't want to see the horses at all, you know, just do the bare minimum. Some take the day to ride. We'll have to start gearing in on that from now until the holidays are over.
There we go.
It is always fun. Well, let's do this. That was interesting to hear that. It's so funny because she's not, you know, she's pretty young. So she's very conservative, pretty young. She's been in the hunter jumper world for a long time. You can tell. And she knows what it takes to win ribbons too.
Yeah, and I was glad to hear her suggest that. Yes, get some individuality out there, but it doesn't necessarily have to be shiny individuality because. It is nice to be able to do something different, and I agree with her. I think the Charles Owen helmets that you get that are in the leather are just gorgeous. Hint, hint.
Yes, I'll keep that in mind.
Do we have some Turkey Day trivia here? I didn't get to do any Turkey Day trivia.
Yes, we do. I have some Turkey Day trivia. We're only a week away, so we thought we'd start digging out the numbers for this year. And, of course, Thanksgiving was started in 1621 by the Pilgrims in Plymouth Colony, where we actually visited there, and they held a three-day feast. Now, what happened was it actually did not become an official holiday till Abraham Lincoln proclaimed it as such, and Franklin Roosevelt was the one who said that it should be the fourth Thursday of the month, and that was to encourage earlier holiday shopping. So even Franklin Roosevelt had in mind the retailers. I found some interesting statistics here that I thought would be fun to go over. There are 64,366 supermarkets and grocery stores in the United States, 64,000 of them. That's a lot of grocery stores. There are 3,889 baked goods stores in the United States where they serve baked goods and desserts and that kind of thing.
Ooh, I'm going to all of them.
I know. Think about this, though. This is what I wanted to show as the dichotomy. There are 3,800 baked goods stores, and there are 2,900 fruit and vegetable markets. So what's more popular?
That's the weight issue in the United States of America.
Yeah. And now the part that would make Jamie Queasy. Now the part that would make Jamie Queasy. Let's talk turkey. In the U.S., about 280 million turkeys are sold for Thanksgiving alone. 280 million. Each year, the average American eats somewhere between 16 and 18 pounds of turkey.
You know, you're saying that way, it sounds terrible. Ew.
I know, but I like turkey, you know, and we just don't eat turkey enough. I think the only, you know, we don't eat a lot of turkey in between, unless we go to like Bob Evans, where you can get a turkey meal anytime.
Yeah.
We just don't eat a lot of turkey, and I don't know why, because I guess it's such a, maybe you got to cook the whole thing, and you can't, you know, a lot of places, I look to buy turkey breasts out of season. And you can't buy them at the stores around here. No, you have to buy the whole turkey. So I think that's partly why.
You get turkey lunch meat. And what's the point, turkey lunch meat?
Yeah.
No.
I mean, it's good. I like turkey lunch meat. But now, what state do you think is the largest consumer of turkey in the United States? What would you guess?
New Jersey.
Why New Jersey? Why would you guess New Jersey?
Turkey, New Jersey. Bunch of go together.
A bunch of Italians live there. They're not making turkey. So... Anyway, I was surprised at this. I would have guessed Pennsylvania, Ohio, you know, one of those states. Nope, it's California is the largest consumer of turkey in the United States.
Well, think about it. They're all pseudo vegetarians in California.
Health food nuts. Yeah, so they're not eating red meat or eating turkey.
See?
Yeah, okay.
So send all of your hate mail, California listeners. Send your hate mail to Jennifer.
Thanksgiving Day is celebrated on the fourth Thursday, and as I said, that was as a result of Franklin Roosevelt. Thanksgiving is considered an American holiday. However, Canada, on the second Monday in October, it has their Thanksgiving celebration, so they also do that. The average weight of a turkey is 15 pounds purchased in the United States. the heaviest turkey ever raised. And this boy mustn't have been able to walk. He was just, they rolled him around, I guess, because how those little legs hold up. 86 pounds of turkey. Ooh, that is a big turkey. Oof. A 50-pound turkey usually has about 70% white meat and 30% dark meat. Now, you're a white meat person, and I like the dark meat, so we get along pretty well. But I remember being
yep,
at your
the
house.
The entire turkey is consumed, yeah.
Yes. Your house, though, it seemed that there were a lot more dark meat eaters, and they always fought over the legs. There was always a fight because there's only two legs. So your brothers.
Yeah, that was leftover from childhood. I really don't think it has anything to do with the meat. I think it's my brother still trying to compete. I think that's what that is. Yeah, it's just sibling rivalry.
And let's play 5-second rule with you. Are you ready?
Okay.
There's five things here, so I'll give you 10 seconds. What are the five most popular ways to serve leftover turkey? Go.
Turkey sandwich, turkey casserole, turkey
yep.
soup, turkey salad, and rotten turkey in the garbage is my fifth one.
You got three of them anyway. Sandwich, a stew, turkey chili apparently is very popular. I didn't realize that. Turkey soup you got, casserole you got, and turkey burgers. Turkey burgers.
Well, how can you put a leftover turkey burger?
I don't know. Maybe
it
they grind
it. Post?
I don't know. That's what it says. Turkey actually has more protein than chicken or beef, which I didn't realize. Turkeys have how many feathers at maturity do you think are on a turkey? This shocked me.
Oh, wait. I don't know. 75 million. That's a lot of feathers.
3,500 feathers on a turkey.
Who counted them?
The poor ladies in the old days who had to dip them in boiling water and then pluck them, they probably knew how many feathers were on a turkey. The male turkeys gobble. The hens do not. They make a clucking noise.
Okay.
So that's interesting to note. Now, can a turkey have a heart attack?
Yeah, when he sees the guy in the pilgrim hat coming.
Actually, like any other bird, you know, birds, especially domesticated birds and birds you keep in a crate can actually be scared to death. Turkeys also can.
Yeah,
well, that's the same thing. They have heart attacks is what happens. And that's the same thing with turkeys. They said Air Force – go ahead.
Well, I grew up down the street from an enormous turkey farm. Tens and tens and tens of thousands of turkeys. And it was a big deal because, of course, all of the teenagers in the neighborhood would get a job in the summertime working at the turkey farm. And it was a big deal because they weren't allowed to speak loudly, run fast, clap their hands, or anything like that because loud noises startled the turkeys and they would drop dead from it.
Well, apparently they had a big problem. The Air Force had to pay up because they had a test facility that happened to be near a large turkey farm like you're talking about. Well, they were doing test runs on breaking the sound barrier in jets. And apparently when they would break the sound barrier, half the turkeys in the coop would die, would just keel over. So the farmer started complaining, and the Air Force ended up having to pay the farmer for all the dead turkeys because they were practicing breaking the sound barrier. And anybody that's heard the sound barrier being broken, it is something to hear. It takes 75 to 80 pounds of feed to raise a 30-pound tom turkey. So 75 to 80 pounds of feed to get him to that point. And that's my turkey trivia for this year. So 280 million of them have probably already met their demise and are in the freezers at the 64,000 grocery stores. And I'm sorry, Jamie, you are still in the minority.
Let me do. I want to do one before we finish up. We're running out of time, but
ahead.
I want to do mine. This is my favorite. This list I think is a couple of years old. But it's still a very interesting list. These are the top 10 Thanksgiving Day box office openings for movies.
Oh, okay.
And what I want to do is go through and see how many of them that you have seen. Okay. Number 10.
Right.
Number 10 in 1995 on opening day, It made $39 million, Toy Story.
Oh, saw that. Love Toy Story.
Saw that? All right. Number nine in 2011 made $41 million, The Muppets.
Yep, saw that. Saw the Muppet movies.
Boy, oh boy, look at you. Number eight in 1989, $43 million, Back to the Future Part 2. Boy, you're a Thanksgiving movie guy. I'm surprised.
I am. I like all Thanksgiving. I guess I like cheesy Thanksgiving movies. All right,
yes,
go ahead.
Number seven, the 1996 version of 101 Dalmatians with $45
million. Probably fell asleep during that one. I can't count that one.
Yeah, didn't see that one. Number six, we're halfway through. In 1998 with $45 million and change, A Bug's Life.
Yeah, we saw A Bug's Life, didn't we?
We've seen A Bug's Life, the attraction at Disney World about a million times, but I don't know that we've ever seen the movie.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that one.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. That one's questionable. Number five in 2000 with $46 million, Unbreakable.
Yep, I didn't see that one.
I don't think I've ever even heard of that one.
I think that's a Bruce Willis movie. I think it's a Bruce Williams, maybe. Bruce Williams, Samuel Jackson movie. Didn't see that one.
Yeah, okay. Number four in 2008 at $46 million and change, Four Christmases.
That's a Reese Witherspoon movie. We didn't see that, I don't think, did we? That's the one where the guy has to go to the four different Christmases.
Oh, you know, we tried to watch that on Netflix, and it was so stupid we didn't get into the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, I don't think we ever got through it.
Yeah,
we're probably the minority there. Jamie probably loved it.
Yeah, that's the way it works. In 2007, number three at $49 million, Enchanted. That's a no.
I don't know if we saw that one. No.
Yeah, no. Get to the top now. Number two in 2010 with $68 million and change, Tangled.
Yeah, we saw Tangled.
Yeah, that's the one with the little redheaded character.
Yep. We saw Tangled. No,
oh, no.
Tangled is
Rapunzel. Let your hair
down. Yeah, long-haired blonde. Yes.
Yeah.
Correct.
See, even in animated films, you remember the female character. Isn't that strange?
I know. See, yeah.
A little creepy. And number one in 1999, I know we've seen this one, at $80 million on opening day at Turkey Day, Toy Story 2.
Oh, wow. I wasn't expecting that. Yeah.
Yeah. And
that's held up since 99.
Yeah, still making millions. Still making millions. The most fascinating fact I found about this entire list is of those top 10, now these are the grossest, top 10 highest grossing, so this is bucks, people. Eight of them are from Buena Vista Studios, which is a Disney company.
Well, yeah, they're all animated. They definitely like to release movies on animated movies, family movies on Thanksgiving Day, don't they?
And
plus, there's a couple of Christmas movies that come out. Yeah.
Yeah, and guess what Disney Studios has coming out this Thanksgiving?
Oh, I don't know. What's coming out?
Saving Mr. Banks.
Oh, yes, which is a movie that is it Tom Hanks plays Walt Disney?
Yep. Yep. It's all about the making of Mary Poppins.
I can't wait to see that. We're definitely going to have to go see that. And, of course, coming out next week is a movie that we're going to definitely go see immediately, and that is Hunger Games Part 2. I love the Hunger Games books, and I love the first movie, so now Part 2 next week. Going to definitely go see that. We'll have a movie review for everybody.
And we
have a special announcement to make because somebody we know, we can't tell you yet, but next week we can tell you, somebody we know was in the movie. So,
oh, that's right. That's been top secret.
Yes, we're allowed to announce that next week.
Two people we know are in the movie.
Oh, that's true. Two people. And let's just say that they were involved in the horses that you will see in the movie. So we'll announce that next week. Maybe we'll have her on to talk about it. Oh, yeah, because she'll be able to talk about it next week, too. So we'll definitely
have her on to talk about it.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
Yep. All right, very good. Well, that's it for today. We hope you enjoyed all the guests. Very good job, Jennifer.
setting all the guests up for today. Fascinating variety. We had a vaudeville show today, a little bit of everything. And we will be back tomorrow, as I said, with the Equisketch, MFG.com, Wheel of Trivia. So join us tomorrow morning. Give us a call, 347-637-3238. Don't forget to find the app on the App Store. Just search for Horse Radio Network on your iPhone or iPod, iPad, any of the iPhone products you can do, and also Android. Any Android product, you can find Horse Radio Network and download our app. People are doing it every day. We have thousands of people now listening on the apps. That's good to see. And Jamie will be back tomorrow. What else, Jennifer? Horse Tip Daily. Don't forget Jennifer's show, Horse Tip Daily. She has four or five shows coming out every week. Did you hit 900 yet? Episode?
We are at 885 now.
You're darn close to 900.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm
when you hit 1,000, we're gonna have to have a party when you hit 1,000.
We're going to have cake, yeah. I have a quandary, though. When I get to 1,000, how am I going to say it? 1,005? 1,005, 1,005. I'm not sure how to do that. So, yeah.
Well, you have 905 or 10 episodes to decide. So.
Yeah, 105 episodes.
Well, we'll talk to you. I got another show to record here shortly. You're going to record the Stable Scoop Show, and you have shows to put together today. So we're going to head out of here. We'll talk to everybody tomorrow.
There you go. What you thinking,
Captain?
Wear
your fancy leather helmets, everybody.
For riding. Clarify that.
Goodbye, your turkey. I've already been gelded, so.